Good morning. This
Okay,
is the BOA
sorry.
hearing. Today is Wednesday,
How
May
long
1st,
have you guys been doing residential?
2024. The hearing is for petition
E-196-23.
The appellants are Paul and Danae Jepson.
Awesome.
Parcel number 1-0898-206-0000-003. The Board of Equalization is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers to make legal decisions consistent with other federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. The role of this board is to review the evidence and testimony provided by both parties and determine the fair market value of the property as of January 1st of the 2023 assessment year for taxes payable 2024. Washington state law presents presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the appellant to prove their valuation is correct to a legal standard of clear, cogent, and convincing. This hearing is recorded and all testimony is under oath. As clerk of the board, I will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath. Do each of you who are testifying today affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth?
Yeah.
Looks like we lost the appellant here.
Ooh. Let's give them a minute, see if they can jump back.
Have we confirmed that he can hear, that he could hear us?
Well, I spoke to him earlier, so yeah, he at that time he was, but
yeah, because it sounds like something's... he was kind of talking there at first.
Well, yeah, and it was repeating something that he said earlier, so I don't know if there's some weird stuff. He's using his phone, it looks like, rather than a laptop.
Oh.
He's back
looks
on.
Like you may have been holding. Here he comes.
He has no video.
Can you hear us, Mr. Jepson?
No, he doesn't seem to be on video or to have his.
Well, I see video now.
Oh,
okay,
he
he's on mute. Mr. Jepson, you're on mute, I think. Can't hear you. Still can't hear you. I don't think we can hear you.
Yeah, I don't see any kind of indicator there for voice.
No, he has to accept.
I could see his lips moving earlier.
Yeah.
Like then.
Don't hear you. Did you turn on your audio? Don't hear you. Marisol, you said he had to do, you said he had to do what?
He has to accept audio. He's not on mute. He just hasn't accepted the audio on his side or else.
Apparently there's a button where you have to accept audio.
He's probably walking around trying to get, thinking he needs connectivity.
Yeah, well, I don't know that that's the problem.
Shoot, right, we have him call on his cell phone, kind of like what another appellant did several weeks ago, where the audio wasn't working, so he called on his cell, and we were able to communicate that way.
Okay. Can we, Marisol, do you have a cell number?
I do not.
I have a number here on the petition. I don't know if it's a cell number.
Maybe just have him hang up and call in.
Yeah, I think he can hear us. So go ahead and tell him, George.
Yeah, Mr. Jepson, we're still not hearing you. There's another option. There's a phone number on the petition where you can call us. We wouldn't get video, but at least we'd have audio. I don't think it's a reception problem. I notice you're walking around trying to get more bars or something. I don't think that's the problem. There's something you haven't accepted audio in on your phone. You might hang up and try it over again and see what happens.
It's like we're out in his new shop, Ray shop.
Yeah. I know he had some questions for us, so we kind of do need his audio.
Yeah. Yes, we can see you. It's just that I think when you logged into the WebEx call, you have to also accept, in addition to the video, you have to also accept the audio for your microphone. He sent a text message. I'm not on here. Try joining. Marisol, I don't know. He sent a message on here to all of us.
Yeah.
Can we reply to that to give him the number? Yes. Oh,
should I call in? Yeah, I see it here. Nod your head if you can hear us, Mr. Jepson.
He's not.
Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay. Marisol, can you give him the number to call in on?
So, yeah. Mr. Jepson, can you raise your hand if you can hear us?
He must not be able to hear us.
So yeah, maybe reply to his email.
It was a chat.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna give him all the information. Give me a sec.
Okay.
Hello?
Oh.
Yeah, now I have you.
He is.
All right, cool.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
So, Marisol, go ahead and finish with your introduction.
Start over.
I'll start with the oath and then finish up, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Do each of you who are testifying today affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth?
I do.
Hearing, the board will meet to weigh all the evidence and testimony and make a final determination. A written decision will be issued to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals within 30 days of the date of the decision letter. The board is in receipt of all documentation provided by the appellant and the assessor, and the board has reviewed it. Chair?
Okay, this is a residential hearing. We allow about a half an hour for these. So for the first 10 minutes, we'd like to hear from you, Mr. Jepson. We'll allow 10 minutes for the assessor, a few minutes for questions, and then we'll excuse everybody and the board will deliberate. So with that, you may proceed, Mr. Jepson.
So my first question is grid conditions and grid class. What's that mean?
Well, condition has to do with the condition of your house. Okay. It can be fair, good, very good, and something like that.
So the number 1, 2, 3.
Jennifer, can you speak to
that? Yeah, I'm speak. 3 is average condition for age. So, for instance, your property is a 3 condition. And that just factors in the fact that it's depreciating as you would expect for a home that was built in 2007. So it has a lot of the original components to it. It will have, you know, at this point in time, it's going to have some deferred maintenance. So it's depreciating at a home that is typical for its age.
Okay, cool.
If a home has lots of deferred maintenance where it's really obvious that there's lots of repairs that need to be done, then that will kind of bump a home to a grade two for condition. Or if a home had like a complete remodel, that would be a four.
Okay. All right. So grid class, can you explain that too?
Yeah, so grid class is in reference to the quality of the build. So there are lots of different things that kind of factor into that. So, you know, typically a split entry home or tri-level home that was built in the 70s, that's just basically a rectangle on top of a rectangle, and it has maybe 1.5 bathrooms. The materials used for that, and also kind of the complexity of the build it's a pretty simple build. So that is going to be a lower class quality, while homes that you see that have stucco exteriors and hardwood flooring, tile, and maybe tile roofing and bay windows and a lot more complexity to their roof lines, those may be more on the end of like a 40 or 45.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
So his house is what? His average.
Mine's a 30. I was just curious.
30, okay.
And so outbuildings, can you tell me the definition of that?
It's a detached building that is typically doesn't have living space. So it could be a large shed, like a pole building or a detached garage. Usually for a storage or a workshop, something like that.
Okay. So on my first comp, so there's no power in that outbuilding, is that correct? Or is there power in that outbuilding?
On your comp one?
Well, I'm asking about the definition for outbuilding still, sir.
So the definition, that's just a detached structure that is, okay. That just adds contributory value, like a shed or detached garage, like a workshop. Just because it has electricity or not, we do not take that into account in mass appraisals. We look at the square footage and the height of the building.
Okay. So on your comp one, you have a 3-car garage with that one, and then you have another 2-car garage with foundation and electricity in it. And so that's comparable to a shed, I guess, is my question.
Well, what is the nature of your outbuilding?
Mine is just a shed. No power, no foundation, just studs. And that the comp, you put it as an outbuilding, even though it's a garage with a foundation and power. And it's probably finished inside. It could even have resident inside from what I'm looking at from the outside, but I didn't see the inside. And so I don't think that compares. And I was also concerned about how an outbuilding has the same price as a garage. So dollar amount tax assess. So anybody that puts a shed on it getting taxed at the same rate for a garage as an outbuilding.
Let me ask, okay, so you talked about your shed. Is there a concrete floor to that shed, or is it dirt floor?
There is. It's a concrete shed. Concrete floor.
Concrete floor,
but
okay.
There's no building permit required for it.
Yeah, I mean, I have an old Sears shed in my backyard. I used to keep a lawnmower in and that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
But if you notice, look at comp one, for instance, on the assessor's package, you notice that they made a negative adjustment.
Correct.
Okay, so what they're doing is trying to make comp one to be considered the same or as your property. So they lowered the value of that shed. They had a larger garage, so they lowered the value of the garage.
Understood that. But my concern is it's not really a shed. It's a garage, that two-car garage that they compare to an outbuilding. Because it has a foundation, has lights and power to it. It has a garage door on it. And they're comparing that to my outbuilding. And my other concern is, if you look at your garage square footage and your outbuilding square footage, your tax assessment is the same for a shed as it is for a garage.
Well, so yeah, what they're looking at is the total value of your property. They're looking at the total value of your property.
Correct.
Okay.
A shed's not worth what a garage is what I'm trying to say. And you're evaluating them the same.
Well, take a look at comp two. So there is no shed, right? There's no outbuilding.
Correct.
And so they made a positive adjustment of $4,670. So that's the approximate value of your shed. Is that correct, Jennifer?
I understand that.
Yeah, the value of the outbuilding is $9,110.
In his case?
Yes, in his case it is. Because again, we value it based off of the square footage.
Okay, then comp two and three have 0 square foot for outbuildings. So why is there only a 4,670 positive adjustment if his shed is valued at 9,000?
Right, because that includes the market adjustment on there.
Okay, and I looked these two up that you're bringing up, and may I talk about those? So the comp two is actually a 2,084 square foot house, not this 1,882. And it sold for that price. It's listed 425. Okay, and then your comp three has a 12x16 shed in the back. But you said the power doesn't matter, but it has the same shed. Or is actually a nicer shed than mine, but you said that part didn't matter, so I'm not arguing that part.
I'm sorry, is that for a comp? Which comp is that for?
So comp two has, actually when I looked it up online, has 2,084 square feet house that's sold. All right, for comp three, it actually has the 12x16 shed looking through the pictures of them selling their house in the back.
If we have it listed as 0 square feet, so.
Right.
It sounded like maybe your numbers aren't matching with what the assessor has.
Well, I'm looking up what they sold and the realtor and what they showed pictures. And so I know they're there from the pictures.
So we have, if I can share my screen.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't have good enough internet to see what you got.
You can't see? Oh, no. Well, if you look on our website, well, I don't know if this will still be on there. We have a historical image from when that shed, outbuilding, detached garage was originally constructed, and it was picked up as a detached garage with that garage door there being on, you know, and it's on the driveway there. So it was assumed that it was a small detached garage. So that's how it's being valued.
Okay. It's not a detached garage. It has no foundation. It has no light, no power.
We're talking
just a door dish, right in lawnmower type thing.
Okay. Which one are we talking now? Comp 2 or 3?
I'm talking about the subject.
My own house is what she's...
Sure. I don't know if you can see there. This image.
Yeah, he's talking about his own garage or outbuilding.
Enlarge this.
Okay, is that it off to the right? I guess you can't see it.
Yeah, I'm going to try to... Can you see it enlarged?
Pull that up a little bit. Yeah.
So that was initially added to the tax roll as a small detached garage sitting on the driveway now there.
This is his house now.
Are you showing my house or whose house are you showing?
He's showing your house.
Okay.
Because it looks like you have some other structures added since then.
But they're not. They're just sheets of plywood.
Okay. Yeah. We're not valuing those items. We're just valuing that original structure, which is hard to see with those with those structures on there. But I'm showing them the original photo from...
And there's only one of those structures left. Okay. It'll be gone here in about a month, so.
Well, they're not on the record anyway, so that's good.
Right.
Okay. Well, let's go to comp 2 then. He says the square footage is different than what you're showing.
According to the cell that I picked up off of Zillow, it's a 2,084 square foot built house.
Okay. Comp 2.
That's a little over 200 square foot difference.
Right. So it's about a $204 square foot house is the price cut cost of that house, which is pretty cheap, but...
I'm sorry, are you talking about the actual square footage measurement?
Yes, I think that's what he's talking about.
According to the realtor that sold the house, it's a 2,084 square foot house.
Okay. Okay. Well, yeah, our records show...
1882 is what you have here, so that's a concern of mine, that whether your records are correct or the realtor's correct, I don't know which one's right.
Right.
I just wanted you to be aware that that's what the realtor was sold it at, 2084.
So based on our historical records, when it was constructed in 1997, we showed that it is the 1882.
Is it?
I don't have anything showing here that there was an addition or anything.
Is it possible you can bring up the Zillow listing and let's see what that shows?
Yes, that shows the 2084.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it sounds like you guys may have a record problem then. Somebody snuck in something when you weren't looking, I guess. Okay, what were you saying about comp 3?
Comp 3 actually has a shed the same size as mine, approximately. I don't have dimensions exactly, but it might even be a little bit bigger. It's definitely fancier than mine, but it has power to it. But she said the outbuilding didn't matter whether it had power or not, so...
So it's not showing it all here, though.
Correct.
The assessor's showing zero shed.
Right.
Didn't
You guys have, do you know where that shed's located? Is it in the front of the yard or?
It's in the back right side, back yard on the right side of the house. Not the side, but if you're looking out the back towards the right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I see it on the aerial.
You do see it?
I do see it on the aerial, yeah. I think that's what it is.
Instead of
the 4,000. Well, I'm kind of getting at the point here that maybe you guys need to go back and do some more research on your.
Oh, that is a shed, but it's on skids. It's not. It looks like it's on skids, so it was. We don't pick anything up that's not affixed to the ground with no foundation.
Well, foundation. Define the foundation for me then.
So it's affixed to the ground. It's not just sitting on skids. It's not sitting on the ground. You know, it has a concrete foundation, you know, or it's tied down to be a permanent fixture. So it's not movable.
The concrete foundation is a 2-foot stem wall and the footings. The concrete slab is not a foundation. Well, it's therefore movable.
Yeah, a concrete slab would suffice as a fixed structure.
All right.
So you're saying that since it's on skids, it doesn't have concrete. It's got probably a wood floor.
Yeah, it's not on skids. It's just sitting. It's like a kit. It shows it on the listing. It's like a kit. Let me see if I can show my screen again. It's like a kit shed that is sitting on gravel.
Okay, yeah, it's like when you would buy at Home Depot or something.
Yeah, we don't value those because those are movable.
Well, it doesn't look very movable.
Yeah, I was going to say, mine's more movable than that one is. Mine doesn't have power, doesn't have anything.
Why do you think that's not affixed to the ground then?
It's sitting on the gravel there. We didn't pick it up because it's a kit shed that they add minimal value.
By their definition, I think if it is, well, so all I got to do is lift mine up on blocks or something? Is what you're telling me?
Yours is movable then, Mr. Jepson?
I'm saying all I got to do is do, it is on a concrete slab and it's tied to it right now. But all I got to do to get it removed is to lift it up on 4x4 blocks or something.
So if it is a temporary structure, it is movable, then it would be considered personal property, and we would not add value for that.
Okay, so if I put it up on 4x4 blocks, that would be considered non-taxable.
Well, how do you have it affixed to the concrete now? Are there bolts in the concrete?
There's no bolts, it's just, I drilled some holes and attached it with some nails. And I could undo that easy and put 4x4 blocks if that's what it takes to get taxes down. It's just as portable as that other one. But anyway, if that's the rule, that's the rule.
Okay, did you have any further comments?
I don't. I appreciate your time, and you guys seem to be doing the best that you can, and I appreciate that. I guess I do have one more. I can buy a new house at $250 a square foot, and in a good neighborhood in West Richland, and you're assessing an old house at 263, I think it was, or 268, I can't remember. 265, sorry.
Well, yeah, that's not how it's valued, Bill, but.
I know, but I'm just saying I can buy all day long a brand new house at 250, so. In West Richland, all over West Richland.
Are those the new ones out by the Country Mercantile, or where are you thinking?
I'm thinking Rupert Road. I'm thinking all over. I just looked on Zillow, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 houses at 250 a square foot or less. All over West Richland.
You're taking the sale value divided by the square footage. Is that what you're doing?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's not actually how houses are valued, but.
Well, I would think a brand new house.
Your point is taken.
Because it hasn't. It's not 12 years old or whatever. You don't have to put a new. Anyway.
Okay. Jennifer, let's hear from you. We're running out of time here, so.
Yes. Okay. So with the assessor's determination of value, you have $471,670 with an effective date of January 1st, 2023. Just to clarify, we don't value based off of price per square foot. It's not an accurate comparison. It doesn't factor in the varying characteristics of a property because no two properties are exactly alike. So what we do instead is we take, you know, the comparisons of similar homes and we adjust for those differences in those characteristics. The grid, it shows the recent sales of one-story homes similar in size and to the subject, and they bracket the subject's age. The comparable sold anywhere from $422,000 to $549,000, and the subject's assessed value is falling within that middle of the range. Based on your description, Mr. Jepson, I would advise that we change the detached garage to a shed on his parcel.
His garage is attached. His shed is detached.
A shed, we don't add sheds to the record unless they're attached. Because then they're considered personal property if they're
Well, I mean, go back and look at the picture. You can see it's separate from the house. It's not attached to the house.
Detached. It's a detached. Right now we have it as a detached garage. I would advise that we change it to a shed because based on his description, now that would be a minor reduction in the value of it. But I feel like a shed, you can't park a car in there.
Oh, no, that's a lawnmower shed.
Yes. So I would advise that we change that to a shed.
And how much would that reduce his valuation?
Not very much.
Okay, my windows.
You valued it at 9,000 and change, you said earlier. Garage.
Yeah, and the cost is more like $4,000. Let me try to work within the software while I'm running this.
I would think you'd just take the $9,000.
They would subtract the 9,000 and change, and then they would add back in something on the order of 4,000.
Okay. Right.
It looks like. But.
So net of 4,000.
Or even 5,000. Yeah. Somewhere in that range.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. So the shed. The So it would be about a $3,000 reduction. So.
Okay. Which doesn't change the taxes at all.
Well, a little bit, but not much, yeah.
Yeah, it, we would reduce it by $3,055. $56 if I round it.
Okay, so as a board now, we're trying to decide what to do here because you still have it as the original value. I guess we as a board can then reduce the original value by that 3056 then and give an adjusted value.
So if we make the change, if Mr. Jepson is agreeable to it, you know, we can create that stipulation paperwork for him and have him sign it and email it to him.
Is that enough, Mr. Jepson, or do you need the board to make a decision?
Oh, I don't want to waste your time for $200.
Okay.
If that's all it is, I don't want to worry about it on my taxes. I'll pay the $200 in taxes.
Okay. Well, Jennifer, why don't you go ahead and mail the stipulation document, and I'll note that in the report.
Okay. So, Mr. Jepson, I will correct the detached garage to a shed that reduces the 2023 value by $3,056, and we'll email you the stipulation form. For you to sign in. Okay. I understand it's a very minimal change, but we want to make sure the record's accurate. So we will go ahead and do that.
I blew comp 1, 2, and 3 out of the water in my book. And so I'm having a hard time agreeing to this little shed thing.
Well, if you throw out comp 2, which is the one you talked about for square footage, it isn't going to really help you because the median
comp 1 is one that is got 5-car garage. And it's the most expensive one.
Are you talking about comp 1? Yeah, comp 1.
Yeah, it's a 5-car.
Yeah, we value based off of that square footage. And, you know, they sold for $549. We don't have you as high as 549 because we've taken into account the differences. You're valued at 471.
So if you look at comp 2 and you were talking about the square footage difference, mm-hmm. If we remove that, it doesn't help you because that actually raises the...
Correct. But it concerns me about the comps that you're using when they're that far off.
Well, I can understand what you're saying about comp 2, but comp 3 was the issue was with the shed, and I think they've corrected that for you. So I'm not sure what your concern is with comp 1.
The comp 1 is not a 3-car garage, it's a 5-car garage. It may even be a whole other building inside that garage, I don't know, from what I can see online.
Well, so, I mean, the square footage doesn't represent a 5-car garage. I mean, you have a 2-car garage.
Yeah, if you're talking about the detached garage, the outbuilding that's adjacent to that, that's an additional 720 square feet. So if you're counting all of that garage space, the total garage space they have is 1,400 square feet, which lines up with what you're saying, with where it being, you know, much more space, more bays for parking cars.
Well, it could even be a living space. I don't know. Because it has power to it.
Yeah, but it has garage doors opening. But, yeah, we don't know.
You're right.
So, but they made a negative $9,500 adjustment for that.
Correct. But they did it to the outbuildings, which I would think would be cheaper than the garage. Because outbuildings don't usually cost as much as a garage, because garages have more to them.
Yeah, I don't know how they're valuing that.
Peter, George, we're running into the next hearing already.
Yeah. Well, the problem, Mr. Jepson, is this is an evidentiary-based hearing, and we look to you to provide us evidence that the assessor is incorrect in their valuation. Now, you've done that to some extent with your shed, but the other testimony we don't have as a basis. You haven't given us any evidence to demonstrate some of the assertions you're making here. You haven't shown us appraisal documents. You haven't shown us construction estimates or whatever that's needed to make your house comparable to theirs. And so we have to go by the best evidence we have, and the best evidence we have right now is what the assessor is giving us. We appreciate what you're saying, but...
Does it say to do that in the packet? Those things you just said?
Yes.
It says to show you documentation of construction.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's numbers. You gave us some comparable sales, and but it sounds like you used some of the same ones they did.
No, the sales that the appellant used, they were 1980s tri-levels, two stories. There was a 1993 one story, but two of those were 2023 sales, so we didn't use those. We didn't use any of the comparables that the appellant provided.
So what you need to find houses that are comparable to yours. So if you have a single story house, you need to find sales of single story houses.
I believe the ones I sent to you were single story houses.
Yeah, there was one story house, but it was a 2023 sale. And the 2023 assessed value effective date is January 1st of 2023. So sales from 2022 are used.
Now, what about his comp two? I mean, that's late enough.
Comp two, it's 21. A 1980s two story. So we did not use that. His comp three is a 1999 two story. We did not use that.
Oh, because they're both two stories.
Yeah, we had sufficient one stories.
Well, don't waste the time sending them the paperwork. We'll just accept the taxes as are.
Well, no, I would like them to correct their record. If their record is incorrect, we would like that record corrected.
We are going to correct the record.
Okay.
But I am not going to sign something. I will just pay the taxes. Okay?
Well, okay.
All right. I have that choice.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Jepson. Yeah.
Thanks for doing your job. You're doing a good job.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Jennifer's, they left too. Okay, never mind.
You want to close the hearing, George?
Good morning. This is the BOE hearing. Today is Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. This hearing is for petition E-197-23. The appellants are Nathan and Sarah Makiela. Parcel number 1-2088-202-0000-013. The Board of Equalization is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers to make legal decisions consistent with other federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. The role of this board is to review the evidence and testimony provided by both parties and determine the fair market value of the property as of January 1st of the 2023 assessment year for the taxes payable 2024. Washington state law presents presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the appellant to prove their evaluation is correct to a legal standard of clear, cogent, and convincing. This hearing is recorded and all testimony is under oath. As clerk of the board, I will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath. Do each of you who are testifying today affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth?
You.
Following this hearing, the board will meet to weigh all the evidence and testimony and make a final determination. A written decision will be issued to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the board, to the State Board of Tax Appeals within 30 days of the date of the decision letter. The board is in receipt of all documentation provided by the appellant and the assessor, and the board has reviewed it. Chair.
This is a residential hearing. The appellant is not present. I'll read from the appellant's petition. She says, we don't have a house slash building built on it, and it reflects that we have a house slash building on our property. And if I understand this correctly, this is a house under construction. So, Jennifer, I guess we'll hear from you at this point. Then I had a few questions.
Sure. So the assessor's determination of value is $438,820 with the effective date of July 31st, 2023. The appellants state that they don't have the house built, that they don't have a house built, and that the valuation reflects that there is one on the property. What I will say is that per Washington state law, based on new construction, we have to assess at 100% of its true and fair market value, regardless of its percentage of completion. So the property here, as of July 31st, the concrete was poured for the foundation walls. So we value the property, the improvements, at only 14% complete. The comparables presented in the grid, we provided land sales to support the land value. We also provided a sales grid as if the home was 100% complete to show where that it kind of provide additional context as to where it would be 100%, and therefore you can kind of deduce that it would where it would fall at 14% for the improvements. And so the lower end of the estimated range, as if it was 100% complete, the lower end of the range was $1,265,690. After we deduct the subject's land value from that, 14% of that remaining estimated improvement value that you would expect is $133,880, and that aligns with the subject's 2023 assessed improvement value of $129,400. So that was just a secondary check that we did just to see that everything lined up.
Okay, so if I take 14% and then scale that up to 100%, that value becomes $924,429, adding the $309,400 for land, and I get $1,333,429. And that sounds like that's within your estimated range. Is that correct? For finished houses?
You're getting a total value for land and 100% of improvements at $1,033,000.
$1,333,429.
Yes. Okay, sorry. Yeah, so that falls within the expected range of what you would estimate at 100%, because the range we had is 1.2 million up to 1.8.
Yeah, okay. So I'm at the low end of that range, and so that seems to be okay then. Okay.
Yes.
Couple of questions here. So I see on land you gave us land you gave us what nine No, 11 comps. I'm having problems with comps 10 and 11 because they're substantially larger than the appellant's property.
Yeah, so that whole road there, Homestead Road, the typical lot sale around there is about $300,000 or just over $300,000. Those lots, they're all view lots. Some of those have topography issues. So, you know, with those being larger lots, they're all kind of selling around the same.
Okay. Is the subject property a view lot?
Yes.
Okay. So let's see here. So for finished houses, yeah, okay. Your grid estimate is $1,555,000 for four houses. Okay, so the $1,333,000 is in, you know, seems to be okay with that. Now, one of them, comp 3, is like 3.6 miles away. That's a little bit further than I would like to see.
Yeah, it's just based on finding comparables that are of similar size and type on acreage. It's another rural area, just on the other end there.
Yeah, but you can see it's in a totally different neighborhood. Can you recalculate? I'd like to throw out comp 3 just for distance. And how does that, that should lower the grid estimate some, because that's a substantially higher value house.
So then that would mean that the grid estimate would max out at $1,709,360, which is aligned, that's comp 1. It would max out with comp 1. And then your median would be the 1 million, would be comp 2, would be your median, 1,401,960.
Okay. Well, this gets back to the issue that I was starting to raise with you earlier, that I'd like to have Chris in for this discussion if he's available.
Sure.
I'm having a real problem. We were discussing after the last hearing, I'm having a real problem with this median versus mean issue. Is Chris available? Maybe we should, before I go any further, maybe we should have him in here.
Yeah, of course. Okay, he's going to be on his way.
Okay, thank you.
waiting for Chris. Do you want me to pull out a statistics book?
Well, I already did. I mean, two standard deviations is 95% of the population. Three standard deviations is 99.7.
Okay, but what does that have to do with mean or median?
And George, Bill's going to be coming in as well.
Okay. That's fine.
I'm going to pull out my results.
How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I hear we're almost done with the residentials.
Yeah, then the real fun begins.
I don't know. For some reason, you know, like the last appellant was saying, he didn't seem to understand that he had to provide evidence. And he wanted to know if that was on the form. And I said, I thought it was. So,
yeah. Yeah, it says documentary evidence and then please provide sales. I mean, I know that every time we get one where they provided that evidence, we explain, you know, why it's insufficient. Most typically it's because they're either super old or too new to be used. But I don't know, the petition's supposed to be more, it's more like a jumping off point to have a discussion with them. But you know, when they don't respond, it's like hello, sir.
Oh, well,
how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm recovering.
From what?
I had my appendix burst.
Oh.
Oh, geez.
About 3 weeks,
Oh, wow. So surgery and then antibiotics. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, we've been talking with Jennifer recently about this issue of median, and I asked, well, why don't we use the mean instead of the median for the groups that we're looking at? And she said it's to prevent outliers. Well,
George, I'm going to stop you there before we even get into it.
Okay.
Plain and simple, mean, median, and average. An appraisal is never an exact number. It's going to be a range. So we're going to use that range of values. And what we determined this year, what looks closely to what the market is matching, is what the average came into. Is that going to be the same for every year? No, depending on what our analysis shows, what the market is doing as it matches to the comparative model, as it matches to our cost and comparative models. We use all those values. We don't just use an average. We don't just use that.
No. Okay.
These comparables, George, have been given to you guys to support the value that we get from, most importantly, our cost plus value. We provide these comparables after the fact. We didn't even use these.
I understand. In
determining our value. So it's a range. It's a range of values. So to pick on mean, median, average, or versus comparable determination versus cost plus determination, it's a range of values. So to pick out one of those, well,
right.
You're pulling at strings and you're picking and choosing. And at the end of the day, the assessor's office has a presumption of correctness. You need to be checking the work of the taxpayer.
I understand.
If it looks off, then check our work, because our work is determined as we're presumed correct. And so if you're starting to see things out of whack, you know, you do have the ability
I'm just talking about the comps that are given to us, right? And on the comps, there's something called a grid estimate, and we're given a median value of those comps. And what we're seeing is if we have like, one of them recently was 9 comps, and so the median value was the number 5 in that ranked list, right? Which would be the median value. But oftentimes we're getting, we oftentimes get six comps. And so what's happening is we're seeing an average of comps three and four. And I don't understand why we can't just calculate the average or mean of.
Because George, it's not a one for one. It's a weighted average. So one comp may be more similar to the subject than the other. You can't just go, okay, all comps are considered at X number of percent, so this is going to be what it is. And
I mean, if you want to use a weighted average, that's fine too.
And in comp, we don't just pick and choose two comps versus the six and just say those two comps, this is the average value. No, it's a weighted measure against all six, nine, 10,
That's not what we're seeing, Bill, that's not what we're seeing, and that's how we're being given.
That's what you're being given in Comper. That's what it does. It does it in the background. That weighted average happens.
No, we're seeing a median. We're being shown a median value, and we can see that median value.
That's fine that you're seeing a median value, George. What I'm saying is whether it's a median value, average value, mean value, high value, low value, each of those comps get a weighted value, whatever that weight of that comp is, if it's more comparable or if it's less comparable.
Then show us that value. Show us the weighted average then. That's not what we're seeing.
No, each comp gets a weighted average, George. Each comp at the bottom of the page has a value. We don't take that across and go, what is the average? If you do that across every comp that we do, you will not go, okay, these six comps, this is the total value. What's the average of that total value per comp? That's not the way it's done.
Well, I don't see how average is any less valid than median, which is what you're showing us.
Not, honestly, George, we'll show you all freaking three. Actually, I think there's four that we could show you. And if that's what you want, we can do that. But honestly, we'll give you a range from here on out. And
we understand we have the range. We're given the range, the min and the max. We have that. And then we're showing a min.
The problem is, George, if I took every way we do things to check our work, you're going to have 15 different values to choose from. So
no, all I'm looking for is something to better explain it to the taxpayer. Okay. So right now I'm writing median values that you're above or below the median. Well, I'd rather write that we're above or below the mean.
Here's the bottom line, George. It doesn't matter mean, median, whatever. We're going to just put market value, plain and simple. Market value range.
We're not talking, Bill, I'm not talking about how you value an individual property.
I get it.
What I'm talking about is how you present it to us. You give us,
and that's what I just, and that's what I just said. We're going to say market value and then give you a range, because if the more values we put on there, the more confusing it gets.
Okay, what we're being seen now is a median value, and the median value is if it's in an odd number of properties, the median value is number five in the listing. Or the middle of the odd number. If it's a mean, if it's an even number of houses like six, then what we're seeing is comps three and four are then averaged together to give us a median value.
Again, you're trying to recreate something, then you're doing it wrong.
Well, I'm just trying to be able to explain it to a taxpayer, right? Because that's what I have in my letter.
You shouldn't have to explain it to a taxpayer, George. That's my job. All you have to do is look at their evidence and look at our evidence. Is our evidence clear enough that it says our market value is correct as opposed to their evidence, which in most cases is never submitted?
Understand. I mean, that's what we typically see. But I mean, It's a much better story if I can write to the taxpayer that their value is below what I've been writing is below the median value, and sometimes it is, or it's a little bit above, or something like that.
Well, instead of stating that, George, why don't we just state something that the assessor's values the number of different values that they use, the market value indicates this range of values, and you can indicate something much similar. The market value range of all the different ways that the assess, however you want to put it, does their values is X to X. And that way it can be clear, because when we start talking mean, median, weighted average to the taxpayer, you're going to get glossy eyes. Not everybody's a mathematician, data scientist. You know, we got to keep it simple as possible. And that's what we are trying to do. And if we get rid of the verbiage of mean, median, weighted average, great. The less confusing, the better. Because then you're going to have to start talking about how do you get the mean? Why is that important? Then you're going to have to start talking about the median, weighted average. I mean, if you really want to explain it to the taxpayer, you're going to have to write a book.
Okay. Well, we'll find a way to do it then.
The way that I refer to it so that taxpayers don't focus too much on the median in the comp grid, George, is I tell them, you know, it's basically your assessed value is falling within that middle of the estimated range. That's essentially the same thing as the median. It's falling within the middle of that range.
Okay.
And if I understand what Noel is saying, your estimated range is kind of a combination of a whole different look, a bunch of different ways of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Comper is an independent third party, and it required us to put one of those mean, right, median, moving average. Right. Average ultimately is more confusing to a taxpayer, and like Jen said, it also can create outliers. And this kind of gets to like the when we do the comp grid, we have to bracket. You know, appraisal practices to bracket. And that's why when we had a triple wide off of Cloudfelter and we had to find something bigger than it that was on over 6 acres of land, we had to look at something in Benton City. Was that home used in the analysis and in the ratio study for the subject? No, but it is. We have to bracket to show those. That's why oftentimes we have at least 6 comps, unless the market absolutely shows that we can't. And it's one of those things where the other thing we have to keep in mind now is we can make these changes and we can pivot in this way, but all the information that you guys have from us is what you're going to have for these hearings. So this information and these changes that we want to make, it's going to have to wait till next year for residential. And
no, that's probably, fine. That's fine.
So just so we're aware of that.
I keep hearing you guys say outliers, but you're not going to have outliers. I mean, an outlier in statistics is beyond 2, or depending on how you define it, beyond 2 or 3 standard deviations from the mean.
Yeah. We get a lot of outliers, George. We just clear them out before we ever get to that point.
Right. But when we're seeing comps, though, we're not likely to see outliers in the comps that you're providing us.
Well, there was an example the other week. I forget what happened. It was the adjusted sales price was really high compared to all the other adjusted sales prices. If we had used the mean would have been more skewed because that would have pulled it higher, while the median ensured that it was falling just within the middle of the range and not being pulled higher.
Because sometimes in appraisal, we have to use comps that really aren't good comps to be able to show
the value
of, you know, a detached garage.
Well, I don't think we're going to get any further than this. So, okay. All right. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you guys.
We need to deliberate on this last one.
Really quick, too, if you want to put in the determinations that if the taxpayer has further questions, feel free to give us a call, because we're more than happy to explain it and talk and go into these greater details.
Well, I don't think that's appropriate to put in our decision letter. So, I mean,
that's fine.
You can do it, you know.
We do it at every turn we can. We're trying to get the taxpayers to communicate with us as much as possible.
Well, I mean, you could send out the letter. You could send out a letter after we send out our letter.
You saw this year, most of the probably over 50% of the appeals filed were people that hadn't even talked to us, right?
Yep.
And as soon as they actually talked to us, those will either be stipulated or they go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Understand.
So we're just trying to get as much face time as we can. And we, so any way we can. So, but if you don't feel that's appropriate, that's great with us.
Yeah. I mean, you guys could send out a letter after we send out our letter and say, we note that the board has sustained our valuation. If you have further questions or concerns, please contact us directly. I mean, you could send out a second letter.
Unfortunately, we don't have that in the budget.
No. Oh, okay. All right.
No, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for your time.
Thank you all.
Thank you all.
We'll see you tomorrow, I guess.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.